Hibbard comes home. The pitch swung on and missed. The throw to second is in time. It's a strike him out, throw him out.
Kick it out left corner. DeAndre wide open for three. He hit it again.
Raider going deep over the middle. Caught. Rucker across midfield, and he's going to take it all the way to the house. 79 yards.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast, the A-State podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, preseason camp wrapping up for A-State football. The first week of the soccer season is in the books, and volleyball was on the floor over the weekend. We'll talk about all that, but we're going to spend most of our time talking basketball today, as the four inductees for this year's Hall of Honor were recently announced, and one name that I know Brad and myself and a whole lot of other people were really excited about is a former men's basketball coach that's responsible for taking A-State basketball to its only trip to the NCAA tournament back in 1999. He's a former Sun Belt Conference Coach of the Year. Welcome in our friend Dickie Nutt. How you doing, Coach?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me, and I'm excited to be here.
Well, I want to go back to just a couple of weeks ago when you got that call from our new athletic director, Chris Pesman. I know you had a FaceTime with him. How good was it to hear that news that you're going into the Hall of Honor?
Well, it was a great time, a great phone call. I didn't have any idea what he wanted to talk about when they set a Zoom meeting up a few days in advance, and I have no idea what he wanted to talk about. It wasn't the slightest thing on my mind at all. I had a couple friends there in Jonesboro that I was visiting with, and I said the same thing. I'm meeting with Chris, and we really had no idea. So when he told me about that, obviously that was a great feeling.
All Coach had to go by was that the new AD had been in the office and had heard about him and wanted to visit. Technically, all those things were true. Every bit of that's true. We just left out one little detail.
Yes, he did. And we had a great conversation, and I certainly was so excited about that and looking forward to it.
I do want to go back and talk about your time at Arkansas State, and this is such a big part of your life. You spent 21 seasons at Arkansas State, 8 years as an assistant, 13 as the head coach. You raised your three kids here. So what's the first thing that you think about, Coach, when you reflect on your time here?
Well, the first thing I think about is how just what you mentioned, spending so much time in Jonesboro, Arkansas, and making some lifelong great friends along the way, raising my three children, Kathy and I, we had such a wonderful time. I was an assistant under Nelson Catalina, and I learned a lot from him. And I remember the day that they walked into my office and they asked me to be the interim head coach for 1 year. They said, Coach, we're going to make a change, and we want you to be our interim coach while we go out and have a national search and hire us a big-time coach. And it kind of hurt my feelings a little bit, but I said, yeah, I'll take it. No problem. So I did, and man, did I get a quick lesson about being in that head coaching position. But we somehow won 9 games, and they came in at the end of the year, and they said, Coach, you know, we won a few games in the Sun Belt Conference, and we really hadn't found who we want yet, but can you just go another year for us? And I said, yeah, that'd be fine. So we went another year, and somehow or another, we won 15 games, and they came in, and we were kind of more excited about that. And they said, well, we're going to probably give you a 2-year contract, and let's do 2 more years. I said, okay, that's fine. And that third year, we won 20 games and won the Sun Belt. We were excited about that, and we go to a conference tournament and get beaten the first game. They said, Coach, you did pretty good. Well, let's just go a 3-year deal. And so the fourth year, I think we played, if my memory serves me right, we played for the final game of the championship in the Sun Belt there in the Convocation Center. I think we got beat by Louisiana Tech on a backdoor play. But we go into the tournament at the number 2 seed, and we go through 3 games with about an 18-point average victory to go to the first ever NCAA tournament. And those are the times that I think about most as far as the basketball is concerned and all the young people that played for us over the 13 years as a head coach, and just remarkable time. I can't help but think my three children and Kathy for the sacrifices they made, because they're the ones that made that sacrifice for me to do my job. And I just appreciate that.
I want to go back, though, and talk about just how you were able to turn it around so quickly, because it was a transition time. And like you said, you were hired as an interim after spending the 8 seasons as an assistant. And you look at the world of college basketball today, and maybe you've got a better opportunity through the portal to turn things around a little bit more quickly. But back then, you didn't have the portal. To go from 9 wins to 15 wins to 20 wins, that was a really quick turnaround. So what was the biggest key for you to turn it around as quickly as you did?
Well, you bring up a good point. It was difficult times because we all know that it's all about recruiting. And anytime that you have the asterisk next to your head coaching position as an interim coach, you knew that that was an uphill battle. But it started with a fantastic staff. You look at Charles Cunningham, Dennis Nutt, Tony Madlock, those guys, man, they jumped in head first and just tried their best to bring us the best players we could get. It was a difficult time. There's no question about that. But we enjoyed every second of it because we had so many friends and family support. Jonesboro, Arkansas is a special place. And that was the reason, you know, and I'll talk about this a little bit at the banquet, is how we started an assist club. And I think the first meeting we had were 7 people showed up. And before it was all over with, you couldn't get a seat in the Western Sizzler on a Monday at noon. And that just tells you a little bit about the support. But it was a tough time, but we enjoyed it so much. And we love coaching. And we were able to go out and get a couple players right off the bat. The first player that we ever signed was right from Marianna, Arkansas, Freddie Hicks. And so we were off and running. We knew that we had an uphill battle, but it was a fun time.
I did want to ask about you, obviously a key figure in that run, a little cat named Chico Fletcher out of Osceola. I'd love to hear kind of your recruiting story of Chico, because, you know, two-sport guy, really was going to come play some football, got banged up. So kind of talk me through, you know, watching Chico as a basketball player and at Osceola and hoping you could get him on the floor even when he was going to come play football.
That's a good question. You know, we saw Chico Fletcher in AAU basketball right here at the Convocation Center for 2 summers in a row. And we saw him break a press single-handedly against any kind of pressure whatsoever. We knew that he was an outstanding young basketball player. However, he was really good in football. Coach Hollis is the one that recruited him. And back then, that if you're going to play 2 sports, the football has to give him the scholarship. And so we offered him a scholarship, but he wanted to play football. So the football had to be the one responsible to giving him a scholarship. And then when he got through with football, he could come play for us. And I think somehow he got hurt during that year in football. And he came over one day and he came into the office and he said, "Coach Nutt, I'm ready to play basketball. I know basketball season's starting." I said, "Well, now, wait a minute. Football's not over with yet." And he said, "Yeah, but I'm injured right now and I can't play this year. I think I'm going to redshirt, but I can start basketball." And I said, "Well, look, you got to clear that with Coach Hollis and let him know your plan." So he did. And he came back over. And I don't know if anybody was really happy about it, but we were. but I'm telling you, it took about 7 days of practice. And I think we went to Mississippi Valley. And the first game that we played, and they put on a full court press. And Chico, we didn't start him. And we couldn't get the ball up the floor for the first 4 or 5 possessions. And we inserted Chico. And man, let me tell you, from that point on, he set the tone, and we couldn't do without him. And man, what an outstanding player he became. I'm so proud of him, and talk to him about every month that Chico calls and we have a good conversation. But boy, he was an exciting player, wasn't he?
Yeah, a 2-time Sunbelt Conference Player of the Year. And he was a big part of those teams in the late 90s that did so many incredible things. And I do want to go back. I know you talked about that year. You win 20. You win the regular season championship in the Sun Belt during that 97-98 season. But you lost in the first round of the tournament. I know that had to sting. So how did that loss in the first round kind of motivate you going into the following year?
Well, I think it goes back to the third year where we played so well. We were able to win 20 games. We won the Sun Belt. We went in tied for first to the number one seed, and we get beaten that very first game. And so what we did, we were kind of in post-season depression the entire summer, and we really tried to go back and figure out what we did leading up to that first conference game. Practices were different. We tried to do everything different. We tried to study a lot of different successful programs to figure out what we wanted to do. And so we did everything different going into that first round tournament of the Sun Belt. And we stayed away from what we did the third year. And we went into this tournament. And one of the things I'll give you an example was, is that we really backed off our practices. We really tried to make it mental practices and not go up and down the floor as much and just really be chomping at the bit to go into this next year of tournament. And we did that. And we were successful with that, able to get to that tournament and have some success and then get to the NCAA tournament.
You touched on it earlier. You didn't just get to the tournament and have some success. Y'all just rolled through people. I mean, you beat everybody by at least 17 in Lafayette to win the championship. I mean, is that the change in plan? Is that just kind of everything clicked? What had you guys on such a roll down at the conference tournament?
Well, I have to tell you, that's somewhat of a surprise. We thought every game was going to be a knockdown blowout. We knew that. I think we faced New Orleans on the first game. I'm not sure. And I think Florida International, and then ended up Western Kentucky at the end. But we were so focused. You know, these guys, Chico Fletcher, Eric Beatty, Freddie Hicks, Antonio Harvey, CJ Pepper, those guys were so focused and so in tune about details. And defensively, we really put on a good performance, and offensively took care of itself. But those guys were so focused going into that game, they were just going to refuse to lose. You know, we went in, and Chico Fletcher obviously was the leader of that pack. But don't ever underestimate the power of Freddie Hicks. He was the air traffic controller back there in the back. He was blocking shots. You know, defensively, he was so good. And then you had CJ Pepper that was so focused on winning. And everything that we did, regardless if it was a pregame meal or a meeting or whatever, CJ Pepper was one of the guys that always stood up and said, hey, let's pay attention now. Let's pay attention to what we have. And when we go into that final game, CJ Pepper even had some added motivation because he's from the state of Kentucky. And so that was a great time. Those guys played so well. We really felt like we could do some damage in the NCAA tournament.
First National Bank's roots run deep in Northeast Arkansas. We began a single Paragould branch with one idea: customers first. By focusing on the best products banking has to offer and valuing the highest level of service, we're now 23 branches across Arkansas and Tennessee. As First National Bank grows, our roots only get deeper, and the mission remains the same: you first, always. Learn more about our products and services at fnbank.net. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Continuing to visit with former A-State men's basketball coach and Hall of Honor inductee Dickie Nutt here on the Second to None podcast presented by First National Bank and by the Cavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Cavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at CavanaughCars.com. So take us back to that moment. What was that feeling like, just that moment, cutting down the nets at the Cajun Dome and knowing that you were taking this program to a place it had never been, the NCAA tournament?
Well, it was almost a surreal feeling at that time. You look back, and as the years go on, more and more you understood about just how difficult that is to do, especially when you're in a conference that gets one bid. And so you've got to put three games together. Sometimes, just like that third year, you can play well all year long. And if you don't play well in that tournament, you know, we didn't even get an NIT bid. We won the Sun Belt, and we go get beat, and we didn't even get an NIT bid. But cutting down that net, the things that really just went through my mind outside my family is just how special Jonesboro, Arkansas is. You talk about people in our program that never said no to me. They never said no. If I said, hey, guys, we got to have $25,000 to redo this dressing room, you got it, coach. Hey, we got to have $15,000 to redo this. You got it, coach. Hey, we need some extra uniform. Hey, you got it. I mean, it was never a no. And if it was the Barry Ledbetters of the world, the Wallace Fowlers of the world, I mean, I'll get in trouble by naming people and leaving and leaving somebody out, but the Jimmy Alexanders of the world, I can't go anywhere. You know, now I'm an assistant coach at University of Missouri and throughout the SEC, and referees almost every game or so or a month or whatever, they will come up to me and say, hey, who was that guy on the balloon? Who was the guy that was pulling the balloon down? And I said, man, that was my man, Ken Stewart. And he would have the three-point shots up there and the block shots up there. That went through my mind.
He's still doing it, Coach.
Oh, that's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And just to have that kind of support, it just brought tears to my eyes. And my wife and I, we went back to the hotel room, and that's all we talked about is how people got behind us and they supported our program. And that was the reason. We had a good staff. We had good young kids that loved Arkansas State. And those were some fine times.
You know, you get your draw. You're going to draw the two-seed Utah, but it's down in New Orleans at the Superdome. Tournament was set up different because you had kind of multiple regions there. So you get down there and you're playing Utah, and you've got Kansas down there, and maybe even Kentucky's down there too. There's all kinds of people down there. But, man, there was a lot of Arkansas State people able to get to New Orleans to watch you guys make some history.
Oh, it was incredible. And I still to this day get emails and texts about somebody would say, Coach Nutt, I was at the Superdome that night. And we had an incredible mountain to climb. We were playing the second seed in the tournament, the famous Rick Majerus, the late Rick Majerus and his University of Utah team. They had about 3 7-footers, if I remember correctly. First half, I think we really played them well, 33-33 at half, I think. In the second half, well, I don't really want to talk about the second half, but hey, nonetheless, we had the time of our lives. Like you said, I think everybody in the state of Arkansas was at that game, and they made that trip. And I have friends that were on that staff at the University of Utah, and they always talk about it all the time. They say, God, you Arkansas State fans were unreal. I said, yes. I said, hey, that's no big deal. They travel like that every game. Of course, you know, I kind of exaggerate a little bit. But we had a great time. And leading up to that point, it was the most awesome feeling as a coach that you could ever be part of. Now, once that was all over with, and I go to SEMO, go to Florida State, and then now Missouri, I got to experience a bigger conference. And what you find out is that sometimes coaches at bigger conference, if they get beaten that conference tournament, they're like, okay, we got a little rest before we get to the NCAA tournament. I mean, it's just a whole different mindset. Yeah. You know, our mindset was so on pins and needles. It was do or die, and it was so much pressure. But we lived every second of it. And the main thing is that we had such a presence at that tournament, and people still talk about it today, about being at that game.
You went on to coach 9 more seasons at Arkansas State. You won 189 games here, second most in program history. At one point, you were the all-time wins leader in the Sun Belt Conference. Certainly some things you can be really, really proud of, but the impact you made just personally on so many people. And I remember when I moved to Jonesboro, it was the 05-06 season. That was my first year at Arkansas State, and here I am going into year 21. But I remember year one sitting down with Ed Way, and he said, man, I can't wait for you to meet Coach Nutt. And I said, well, I can't either. And we ended up meeting, but you did something. I remember going to my very first basketball practice that first year. I didn't know anybody in there, and I walked in, and I'm watching practice, and you stopped at one point, and you called everybody over, and you introduced me to the team. And in 21 years, there's never been another moment like that, and I got to tell you, that meant so much to me as a young broadcaster for you to stop and do that. And that's the kind of things that I remember when I think about you, Coach.
Well, thank you, Matt. That brings tears to my eyes, man. I remember that day. I just know what it feels like to go into a place and not knowing one soul. And I thought, man, we want to get to know you. And well, thank you for bringing that up. And you've done a great job there, Matt. And we had some great times, that's for sure.
One thing that we do want to let everybody know is what your family's up to now. Everybody got to know Logan and Lucas and Lexus, and we got Logan right down the road now. He's head coach at ASU Newport. I'm sure he's making you proud.
You know, I'm so proud of that. They called 2 years ago and they asked me, I took a brief athletic director's job at Gaston College in North Carolina, mm-hmm. where they put together sports, athletics. I don't want to get off on a couple of different subjects, but there was a reason I left Cleveland State, and I was with Dennis Gates over there, and we had two really good years, but I was an assistant to the head coach. And in other words, I was in a different role. I wasn't really on the court coaching. I wasn't really recruiting. I was just evaluating every practice and kind of a consultant to him. I spent more time with the head coach, maybe planning practices and evaluating every game. But anyway, when they called me from Gaston College, at that point of time, I was 298 wins. Now, that doesn't mean anything to anybody except me. and on a personal note, the NABC recognizes every 50 wins for a head coach.
Yeah.
50, 100, 150, 200, 250. Well, I get to 298, and I was two away. Now, during that time after I left, I will mention that they took away, I think, 25 wins or something. They called me one day and said, Coach, you had a walk-on that was ineligible. And I said, well, I don't even think he ever got in a game, did he? No, but it still cost 25 wins. I go, okay, whatever. But in my mind, I said, well, I can go over here to Gaston College and I can become a head coach and I can start my own program. I can be an athletic director. I can hire five coaches and do volleyball and baseball and so forth and so on. But long story short, I enjoyed every minute of it. I was able to get that accomplished. But they called and they said, Coach, you did the same thing at Gaston College that we're wanting to do here at Newport. And I said, well, I got news for you. I'm not coming to Newport. And they said, no. But we're looking for a basketball coach. And I said, well, I got the guy. And he said, well, who is it? I said, my son. They said, really? And I said, yes, my son Logan is a phenomenal young coach, and he would do an incredible job. And man, he took that job and he's done so well. Listen, they don't have housing. They don't have food. They don't have cafeteria. They don't have a gym to practice in. And they managed to be 500 for the first 2 years. It's incredible what they've been able to do. And he gets a job offer last year in Fayetteville, Arkansas for over $100,000 for a high school job. And he turns it down and he says, I'm in college and I love Newport. So he's at ASU Newport, and thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah.
He's doing a fantastic job. Really proud of him and Lucas as well. Lucas still in Jonesboro, and he has his own business there. I love that about him. And then my daughter's better than all of them. Lexus is in Dallas. She's a general manager of a restaurant there. And so they're all doing good. We stay in constant contact every day, and we always talk about our times in Jonesboro, Arkansas.
So we're walking that line between, you know, wanting to talk about all the things, but also wanting to save something for Friday night, October 3rd. But for people listening to this, I know they're going to want to hear, you know, how you're feeling.
Well, I'm doing great. Thank you for asking. About 2 years ago, the doctors say that I was very lucky that in my profession, we have a doctor at your work every day. And so as an assistant coach here at University of Missouri, I just kind of strolled over to my doctor one day. And I said, Doc, now don't be alarmed. I got a lot of muscles popping up everywhere. But right here on my leg, I got a bump here. It's kind of like a mosquito bite that never gone away. And when I roll my leg around a little bit, it just kind of moves a little bit. And they said, oh, it's probably nothing. We'll get it checked out. They did an MRI. And they called me in. They said, Coach, you got deadly cancer. I said, what? I've never been sick a day in my life. They said, you got Ewing sarcoma. It's curable, but it's a long road. I said, you got to be kidding me. They said, no, it's some of the most extensive chemotherapy that has to be administered and just get ready. I said, you got to be kidding me. So I go to my head coach, Coach Dennis Gates. We were together at Florida State. And I said, Coach, now's your time. I said, you can send me out to pasture. I can retire. I'll play golf the rest of my life, go live in Florida. Now, I can't buy yachts, but I can play golf the rest of my life. He said, no way. We're going to stay right here. We're going to get you through this. You're going to be right here with me. And so I took on that challenge of chemotherapy, and it's brutal, absolutely brutal. And praise the Lord, it went away. I'm cancer free, and I hope that it'll never, ever come back. It's incredible. And I'll tell you, I'll give you one story. I told our players, our coach, Coach Gates asked me to tell our players a little bit about going to MD Anderson in Houston, Texas. And I wanted a second opinion, and they set me up for MD Anderson. So I fly into Houston, I get an Uber, and I go in, and I don't know if you've ever been to MD Anderson. It's a magnificent building, but there's people everywhere. I mean, all ages, young, old, it didn't make any difference. And it's just like a madhouse. And I walked in, there's four women standing at the door with clipboards. And I walked in, I said, David Nutt. Now, you guys all know me from Dickie. My birth name is David. So during COVID, I had to go back to my birth name on the birth certificate. But anyway, so they said, yes, you're going to the ninth floor. So I go up to the ninth floor and I meet with this doctor from Iran. And he tells me, yes, you got deadly cancer. We got to treat this immediately. And it's going to be a long road. I said, okay, I can handle it. So I'm walking downstairs and I walk by these ladies. And one of them says, congratulations. And I turn around. I go, now, ma'am, I don't hear so well. Now, what are you telling me? And as a result, now, we've lost a lot of games at Missouri that year. And so I thought, well, maybe we won a game or something. And so I said, thank you. And I took another step and I looked back and I said, ma'am, I got to ask you, why are you telling me congratulations? And she pointed out the door and she said, are you going out that way? And I said, yes, ma'am. She said, 50% of the people that come in here never go out. Wow. You talk about a quiet ride back to that airport. Hey, don't complain around me. So I've been very blessed to have a lot of support. My family was with me during that whole time. I was able to spend time with my brothers away from the office. I took 6 rounds of chemo. I took 25 radiations. And the doctor said, hey, it worked. So praise the Lord for that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we could not be more pleased to hear that, Coach. Couldn't be more excited to see you coming up October 3rd for the Hall of Honor banquet. Really enjoyed talking with you today. Great to see you, Coach.
Man, thank you so much. I'm so proud of you. Great job, man. 21 years. You're doing something right now. They don't just keep anybody for that long.
That's Dickie Nutt joining us here on the Second to None podcast. We'll be back to wrap it up right after this.
Get huge savings now at every Cavanaugh dealership. Cavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. And most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model, so you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Cavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars. Bring a vehicle, get a check. Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to CavanaughCars.com.
Wrapping things up here on the Second to None podcast, presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. Well, football is wrapping up preseason camp this week. This episode coming out on Tuesday. Today, the final day of preseason camp. First day of school on Wednesday, and then they'll get to the regular in-season practice schedule coming up on Thursday. But they did have the final scrimmage of camp this past Saturday. We knew one group coming into the season that really had to come along quickly and fill in some spots, fill some big shoes from a season ago. It was the offensive line. Jacob Bear and Makai Butler both fighting to be on NFL rosters this season. And both of them with very good chances to do that. But those were two of your starters last year on the offensive line. And Coach Jones did mention it after the scrimmage. And look, just watching it, it was very apparent that the offensive line had made big strides from scrimmage one to scrimmage two. But Coach Nick Grimes, who's in his first year as offensive line coach, remember he was the tight ends coach before, but his dad, J.B. Grimes, who we know very well from his days at Arkansas State. He was Coach Malzahn's offensive line coach back in 2012. They know what they're doing on the O-line, those Grimes boys. And
I believe, Dad's made a trip or two to Jonesboro.
He has. But, yeah, offensive line making progress. That was a positive sign.
That is, yeah, it is.
Saturday.
It was good to hear that was something position group Coach Jones singled out. So any fan base in America should be happy if you're coach is talking good about your offensive line.
That scrimmage was at 3 o'clock Saturday, and I don't ever remember a preseason scrimmage being at 3 o'clock, but obviously you're going to see how your conditioning is when you do practice in the middle of the afternoon in mid-August. But you also have to look at the schedule too. Yeah, you got a 6 o'clock game coming up on the 30th against SEMO, but then week two against Arkansas is a 4 o'clock game, and then week three against Iowa State, that's a 3 o'clock home kickoff. So you understand why they do want to practice in the middle of the afternoon.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it was, you know, brutally hot over the weekend for sure. And you've got to be real careful how you do that with the breaks. And I know they are extremely careful about that. But yeah, you're fixing that to play two of your first three games right at that time of day. So as unpopular as it may feel, you got to be acclimated at that time of day.
Let's talk A-State soccer. They began the regular season this past week, winning their season opener at home over Texas A&M Corpus Christi this past Thursday. 2-1, the final score in that one. Lucia Flores with the game-winning goal in the 82nd minute of that contest. So always good to start the season at home, and great to start the season with a win. And then they go to UT Martin Sunday night, and they gave up a goal 5 minutes in. They're down 1-0 for the next 80 minutes or so. And then Kennedy Horn scores in the 84th minute of that game, and the Red Wolves able to get a tie on the road.
Well, you had to defend a late corner kick right toward the end and to preserve that tie. And I talked with Coach Dooley even before the UT Martin game, even about one of their exhibitions where they managed late to get a tie. And he was so encouraged by that because he said over the last couple of years, the team might not have done that. They very well might have ended up being a 1-0 loss. So I know he likes what he's seen out of this team, that they'll go scrap to the very final horn and turn a loss into a tie. And good start to the year for that bunch.
Looking at the week ahead, they'll be back home Thursday at 4, hosting Stephen F. Austin, and then the soccer team will be at Oklahoma State Sunday at 1. Volleyball was on the floor at First National Bank Arena this past Saturday. They played their Scarlet and Black scrimmage, and if you want to go check them out, they're going to be home again this Saturday at 2, hosting North Alabama.
Yep, Tristan Johnson's bringing his bunch up for some work before the regular season gets started for both teams. So always fun to see Coach Johnson. The last couple of years they've played multi-team events. North Alabama's come up, so had a chance to see what he's done in his time there. And so you get to see both those coaches who at different times were David Rare assistants go at it Saturday at 2.
Man, it was great to talk to Coach Nutt. Great to hear how well he's doing.
That's the big thing.
The main thing is what we talked about there at the end, and that he is cancer-free and able to come to the Hall of Honor banquet coming up on October 3rd. We were talking to him before we started recording, and he was going through all the family members that will be at the induction ceremony, and we're going to have a really good crowd there, and I know a lot of fans are going to want to be there as well.
So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a,
get your tickets.
Be a good scene. Yeah, get those tickets. Red Wolves Foundation has those for you, and yeah, I'm looking forward to all four of those inductees.
All right, that's going to do it for us. We always appreciate you tuning in. We hope you join us again next week for our next edition of the Second to None podcast, presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank.